This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I am retweeting right now a picture that somebody took off the YouTube page of the moment that we found out Daris was not allergic to shellfish. And they said, pure joy, congrats, Daris. It's the funniest image. I'm going to post that at Grant H. Paulson right now for you. Very, very funny. Welcome back. You're locked into the Fan. We're taking you up to 6:30 today. The local footballers are building a foundation for success on the field. You should do the same. Think about your future. The exclusive sponsor of our show will help, the law firm Condori and Murad. It will update your last will and testament, set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation for their estate planning attorneys today. Visit KMLawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's KMLawyers.com. Danny, we're out and about tomorrow. Field trip Friday to Maryland.
Sports and social in Bethesda, North Bethesda, whatever I'm supposed to call it. Trust me, that's exactly what it is. But we will be there. We've had this incredible run, three different locations. They've all been a blast. But we'll be there 2 to 6:30 doing our program. It's on Grant Park Avenue in North Bethesda. Just trying to get the nomenclature right. But sports and social, we will be there.
Let's go to the guest hotline right now. Welcome onto the show, Mike Golic Jr. of DraftKings. Very, very excited to talk football with him going into Week 10. Mike, you're on in D.C., home of the first place and still defending division leader Washington Commanders at 7-2. We can't believe what's happening here. What's your take from the outside in on these Commanders?
Yeah, it's been that kind of season where I think for so many of us nationally looking at and trying to prognosticate this upcoming season, we were looking around going, all right, who has the ingredients to do the Texans thing? We all seem to like the Texans thing. C.J. Stroud comes in and balls. D'Amico Ryan is the hot young coach that everyone's trying to get their hands on. And they come together and vibe check an entire organization back into relevance. And everyone was looking at Chicago and going, all right, well, Matt Eberflus isn't new, but you know, he's getting a new lease on life, and Caleb Williams, someone we really like here. There's too much wrong in Washington. We won't ignore that they meet all the criteria of new defensive head coach, now albeit one getting his second crack, and young, very talented quarterback that people like, and the second quarterback off the board in his respective draft, much like CJ was. So it's been fun watching it come together, and I think the most enjoyable part has clearly been how much buy-in Dan Quinn has gotten. His second time around here, a guy that seemed beloved by the defensive players in Dallas, now seemingly getting the whole team and an entire organization coming off of what you guys know, one of the worst eras in football in terms of ownership and the effect it had on an organization. It's been great to see the Commanders fun, relevant, easy to root for, all things that were hard to say before.
Where do you have them in the NFC, Mike?
I mean, I think in the NFC, it's really the race now between them and Philadelphia. Everyone else has sort of been, you know, dead and gone and off to the side. I think top end for the NFC is really hard to legislate right now just because the teams that we expected to dominate that conversation, you know, and the 49ers have certainly fallen back to the pack a little bit there. The NFC South in a little bit of disarray. We know the NFC North, the Detroit Lions feel like the surest stock at this point, and Minnesota got off to such a hot start. Maybe Sam Darnold leveling off a little bit now. So I would say the NFC hierarchy for me is, hey, I put the Detroit Lions number one above everybody else right now. I think they've earned that right. I think after that, hey, San Francisco, if they get Christian McCaffrey back healthy and those things start to load up, I'm confident in betting on the pedigree, experience, and continuity of that team over most others. And then when you get into, you know, the Rams, the Minnesota Vikings, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Commanders, I think everybody in that tier, a lot of it's going to be dependent on who's healthiest down the stretch, which we know is kind of the baseline for everybody else. But, you know, being able to bet on a rookie quarterback preparing these guys for a true postseason run is something that's still a bridge too far for some, but I think Jaden and this coaching staff have earned the right to be in this conversation.
What's your take on Jaden Daniels and whether or not it's too early to say he is the rookie of the year, like he's going to win the award definitively? Also about him as an MVP candidate.
Him as an MVP candidate, probably a bridge too far at this point. I think, you know, Lamar Jackson is a two-time MVP who's blowing his own MVP numbers out of the water on the best offense in football right now. Josh Allen, you know, Patrick Mahomes doing less with more. And, you know, for Jaden, some of it's, you know, the gaudy passing stats aren't going to be there just yet in terms of, like, touchdown production. But, you know, I won't let that stop us from watching what we've seen and it having an impact. But offensive rookie of the year, that one I'm comfortable saying, it would take a Herculean effort at this point for someone to pry that out of his hands. Now, I would say as we handicap the offensive rookie of the year race, Brock Bowers not getting nearly enough love for going and doing what he's doing on a team that has nothing else to get excited about offensively. But I think Jaden Daniels has that one pretty firmly sewed up.
Mike Golic Jr. with us here on G&D. So just in terms of, I would love for you to quantify what we're actually seeing. Like, we know he's been incredible, and it's that high floor. Like, there haven't been any of those, well, that's a rookie doing rookie-type things, you know, whether it's the five-interception game or a bunch of fumbles or putting the ball in harm's way or forcing things. It just seems to have been so easy for him, and I know it's not that easy. Try to quantify this for us. What are we seeing in terms of where he fits historically among rookie quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think, like, obviously, I don't think passing numbers-wise he's going to hit, like, you know, what we saw from, you know, like, prime Andrew Luck or Cam Newton or even C.J. Stroud in the passing totals from last year. But I do think looking at him, the area that to me is one of the big ones, and this is not to discredit the group I'm about to mention. The offensive line has outperformed my expectations this year, taking, you know, the guys that were former Chiefs backups and rotation players, bringing Tyler Biadasz over from Dallas, a guy that Dan Quinn knew really well, who's kind of helped set the foundation for that group. And having a veteran like that with a rookie quarterback goes a long way at the center spot, where that's a brain trust that kind of works in tandem before most plays. But you look, I think they're what, like second or third in the NFL in yards before contact per rush, which is usually two parts. It's an offensive line stat. How well is that group blocking, making sure that running backs aren't getting hit and touched until a couple of yards down the field. But in my mind, that's also a mobile quarterback stat. You see the teams they're up there with are the Philadelphia Eagles, the, you know, aforementioned Baltimore Ravens. And so having him there and what he's meant to that rushing attack and how potent he's been in that aspect of the game, I think goes a long way along with the backfield they've got, you know, bringing Austin Ekeler over, Brian Robinson, and what he's meant to that team. I think that's one of those areas where you've seen a real tangible impact that's made this team a real threat.
I want to dig a little deeper into the Marshon Lattimore trade. We've talked a lot about what it does at corner, which was their weakest position. But what we got into yesterday, kind of as a second level, is maybe you play more man. You don't have to play as much too high. Maybe you bring Jeremy Chinn down in the box. And even though they didn't add the D tackle that might have helped stop the run, a big, you know, road grading type, you know, smart car that has to be moved, maybe he does inadvertently help against the run as well. I mean, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, and no, to your point, and I don't know how many moves there were out there necessarily on the defensive front that were going to be realistic. And so Marshon Lattimore, when you look at the trade deadline, of the players that were going to be available from a team like New Orleans that was going to be selling, it's about as good as you could have hoped for, a guy that's still got a lot of real good ball left in him, most people think. And so, yeah, I think one of the ways to remedy the run defense problem can be, hey, let's just change the math problem there. If we can't personnel through this thing until the offseason, why don't we try and at least just add numbers to the box? So I think you're absolutely right. And as he gets up to speed, listen, coming in and fitting in what Dan Quinn wants to do defensively, I'm not going to say that there's not intricacies, but especially if one of your goals is play a little bit more man coverage, that's sort of the universal solvent and something that everyone can kind of understand. Hey, go check the good guys so that we can throw more run defenders in.
What's a successful year for Washington? I mean, because they've already gone past their win total. I mean, they were at 6.5 in a lot of books for the year. So this is kind of uncharted territory for us. But now that they're here, what should we, you know, at the end of it all, I mean, obviously winning the Super Bowl would be great, but what's kind of the minimum we'd go, you know what, that was still pretty damn good?
I mean, God, at this point, I would say you're already there. Like, the rest of it is really gravy at this point. But I said a while back, and now some of this has changed because as the Eagles got A.J. Brown back and Devontae Smith back on the field and what Saquon Barkley's done since he's come over there, combined with some of their rookies coming on. I mean, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean in the secondary have started to look awesome as of late. And so I think it's going to be a real dogfight for who ends up winning that division. But I said it a few weeks ago talking to Dad on the show. We've arrived at the point now based on the conversation, again, the Commanders have earned their way into with their play, where it could be looked at as a disappointment if you don't go out and win the division this year with the way things have shook out. That's how well they've played. And I say all that, even if they go and somehow Philadelphia and the weight of all that talent ends up going and getting the job done if they win the division there. Yeah, it might be a bit of a missed opportunity, but man, if you're Washington already, coming in this year, finding your quarterback of the future, seeing the foundation set the way they've done it in year one, you feel like this is the beginning of a lot more. And now, hey, look only as far as Houston to see. It doesn't always work like that. Success and progress aren't always linear in this league because the looming specter of injury, you got to continue to evolve year to year. But again, finding the quarterback is the hardest thing to do, and you guys have done it.
Mike Golic Jr. with us on Grant and Danny. I want to go back to the conference combo we were having earlier in the discussion, because I'm with you on Detroit. I think they're head and shoulders better, and we've kind of said Washington could be the second-best team. What does that second tier look like with Washington, though? And you mentioned a couple of these teams in passing, but Atlanta seems to be trending up. Offensively, they're getting better and better. I just don't trust their defense. They're 6-3 in a bad division. They'll probably win the South. But Philly, who may well still win the East, you know, Green Bay's got an interception problem, but Jordan Love, when he's not throwing picks, makes ridiculous throws and is as good as there is otherwise. The Bears are a tough customer. Washington just played them. Like, what do you make of the rest of the NFC right now?
I think a lot of the teams you just mentioned, the NFC South is interesting to me because, man, Tampa just refuses to die. Like, that's a team that very could have easily beaten undefeated two-time defending Super Bowl champions on the back of basically just Baker Mayfield and the Pips on offense. So I do think that's a team I won't count out in the South, but I'm with you. Not trusting the Falcons generally tends to be good business, even when it feels like it's going in the right direction. But I think aside from that, you look at the NFC North, that's a three-team division that looks like it could be playoff teams. Outside of, you know, Detroit, they're in the Super Bowl weight class. They're vying for something bigger than that. But Minnesota is a team that if they can weaponize enough good Sam Darnold, and that's pretty easy to do when you've got Justin Jefferson there, to go along with that defense, they got a chance to be a team that can make a playoff run. Green Bay, we watched get hot the second half of the season last year. Jordan Love, when he gets going, can play 9 games of the best quarterback in the NFL if you're not careful. And Jeff Hafley's defense has been a lot more aggressive this year. But I'm going to be honest, the division that intrigues me the most in the NFC is the West, because you do have a team in, you know, San Francisco who's been to the dance a few times, and the core of this roster, when healthy, is still all of that DNA. But then the Los Angeles Rams, man, all of us were bracing for impact as to how bad this thing could crater. And then Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua both decided to come back on Thursday Night Football and sort of knock our socks off. So as long as Puka doesn't get thrown out for another really weak punch to the face, this is a team offensively that's as good as any in football on their best day with Matthew Stafford, that rushing attack with Kyron Williams and those receivers. And don't look now, hey, the back end of that defense is still a little ways away, but they've been opportunistic, and the front seven are young, incredibly aggressive, and putting a lot of pressure on opposing quarterbacks. So the Rams, once again, look like a really dangerous team in the NFC.
How is Kansas City doing this? Like, I understand they got Pat Mahomes, but they have a worse point differential than the Chargers. They've given up almost 50 more points than the Chargers in the same number of games, yet one team's 8-0. Using, you know, all sorts of misdirection and magic and illusions and spells, and their Chargers are 5-3, and they're pretty good. So that's one way of example. I think they have the 8th best point differential in the sport, and here they are, 8-0.
Because they do really well in situations that make other people blink is probably like the shortest answer I can say. When it gets tight at the end of the game, they're at their best. Like Chris Canty was a guy, Super Bowl champion for the Giants, and I used to do radio with. And he said, can you be at your best when your best is required? And that's an easy thing to say and a really hard thing to do. As someone myself that was a longtime college backup, late blooming starter, back end of the roster, tryout guy in the NFL, man, when you get in the lights are bright right there, a lot of the rest of us normal players, you get nervous, your heart starts beating faster. And the Chiefs just kind of default to the standard that they've set there for themselves for a while. Pat knows, hey, when it gets tough, I can break glass on the Travis Kelce thing and just keep going at him. Hey, the interior of our offensive line, no matter who's in the backfield, is still going to be able to clear out holes. And Steve Spagnuolo on defense always seems to have the right answer for, hey, when a team's driving down in the red zone for a chance at a go-ahead or a big third down late in the game, he's got some designer blitz you haven't seen the entire game. Andy Reid's got a formation that he's safe till overtime that he hasn't run that all of a sudden produces the big gain. Like, they just never really blink or flinch. And when it's time to go out there and win in critical moments, that's the time they're at their best.
Tonight, Thursday Night Football, Mike, we're jacked up for the game. You got the Bengals in Baltimore taking on the Ravens. Cincinnati needs the game more than Baltimore does. The Bengals are 4-5. They're just on the outside of the playoff picture right now. What do you anticipate tonight?
A lot of points. I mean, hopefully we get an absolute carbon copy of what we got in Week 5. If you're a Bengals fan, you obviously hope that doesn't end the same way with the doinked field goal and then losing in overtime to Derrick Henry. But I just think points will be aplenty in this game because the Baltimore secondary, yeah, I know they were also active at the trade deadline, but I don't know what Tre'Davious White affords you in 2024 based off what we saw at the beginning of this season. And so for the rest of that team, they don't get pressure on the quarterback very much, and that secondary has shown, hey, with enough time, you can find holes back there. And Joe Burrow is playing lights-out football on the other side. The difference is the Bengals defense outside of Trey Hendrickson doesn't really do anything overly well, and you're going against maybe the best offense in football. I mean, we talked about it. The stats they're putting up right now in terms of points per game and yardage per game have only been accomplished by the greatest show on turf, 2000 St. Louis Rams, and then the 2013 Denver Broncos that annihilated every record known to man. So I just think this Ravens team, all they're going to need is a little bit of help from a defense that has a core I think can count on more so than what's on the other side for the Bengals on defense. And offensively, Lamar Jackson, the way he's playing right now alongside Derrick Henry, who looks like he found the fountain of youth in Baltimore, I just think that team is too much for most anyone to overcome right now.
Mike, this was awesome, man. Really appreciate the time and insight, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Great segment. There's Mike Golic Jr. with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Coming up at the top of the hour at 4 o'clock, 40 minutes out, we've got tickets to Iron Maiden ahead of the Beltway Blitz. You better be listening. Next, though, these two upcoming games, and you would say over the next two weekends, but it's not even that. 7 days from now, basically is what we're talking
about.
We're
doing it again.
The Steelers on Sunday, and then the Eagles this coming Thursday, a week from today. That's going to tell us everything we need to know about these Commanders. I want to look at that. Plus, the Nats just sent out a press release to announce their start times. There's a lot made about their 6:45 first pitches all season, whether that was a good decision or a bad decision. Are they sticking with the 6:45 weekday start time? We'll tell you next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Bad news to those of you who, like me, hated the 6:45 p.m. starts for the Nationals this past season. They are sticking with that start time for their weekday games. They just released the start times for all of their games on their schedule this season. Their home games, Danny, in the evening, 6:45 p.m. They will keep their 4:05 Saturday games. Sundays will be 1:35, as has been the case. And any weekday afternoon games on getaway days are mostly going to be at 12:05 or 1:05 this season. So no changes really to start time. After last year, they went from the traditional 7:05 to the trend around the league, 6:45, mm-hmm. So kids can stay a little longer, games end earlier. And there's a lot of good to that. What I really hate, though, is, and you just see it, people have a hard time getting there for the first pitch. And if you're paying for a game and it's shorter than it's ever been, and so you're getting there, let's say, at 7:25, whereas maybe you used to miss half of one inning, or the, you know, you get there in the bottom of the first, it might actually be the third inning by the time you get there, and then the game goes way faster, and it's over at 9:20 or whatever, and you're going home having seen 5.5 innings of baseball paying the same ticket price.
Yeah, so I think if that was widespread, I don't know that the team would want to do it, as to your point. Like, in other words, you go, I got someone who's not going to be in my ballpark for three innings a lot. That's not good business. So I bet you they've thought about it and studied that. You're 100% right. That's going to be a problem for somebody. There's no perfect solution. There's no perfect start time. There's no way to get everybody there or keep them there or you know, whatever the case may be. But I think the thought is people are working and commuting differently. You know what I mean? Like on a regular workday where someone actually does go into the office, I can't even tell you the number of times that like people just leave at 3, leave at 4, because the kids have a thing or whatever.
There's no such thing as a 9 to 5 anymore.
Yeah, so people don't do it the same way.
If you're in your office, you can leave earlier. But I just see it. I'm at a lot of games. You see people that center field traffic.
Well, you're totally right. Yeah.
Is now in the first and second inning. It used to be bigger right before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I've just talked to too many of my buddies that do have grown-up jobs, you know, that don't get off 30 minutes before the game, no matter what time the game is, like you and I, because we're directly tied on the flagship
right.
to the Nats.
When we stop, they start.
Exactly. No matter when we stop, 30 minutes later, they start during the baseball season. But there are so many people who tell me, yeah, I can't make it until, you know, 7:30 or whatever because I'm at work or I'm doing this or I'm coming for my kids' practice. And so I think the idea is good because I've also been able to take my kids to games at night.
Mm-hmm.
And they do last longer. They are able to stay up and see more baseball at home, which I think is part of it too, not just the in-house element.
Both, yeah.
My kids are able to watch more innings, and the game goes fast, and it starts at 7:05. There's games that are over at 9:30, which is amazing. So it's basically a decision as to you're losing one or the other. Which one is it?
Yeah, like, it's always
a trade-off. Poison kind
right.
of deal.
One thing, just to note, 20th anniversary season. That's not lost on me. It's still, we're rapidly approaching the teetering point here, but it's still more than half my life without baseball in Washington, D.C., but we're rapidly closing to where it's going to be even, and then it'll be more time with than without. And that seemed unfathomable to me
as a kid growing up. So this would be their 21st season?
See, this. Here we go.
And their 20th anniversary.
So I'm just reading from the press release. The team will open its 20th anniversary season. So doesn't that mean it's their 21st season?
I don't know. I think it does. They started in 2005. If you count every single season, my guess is this is the 21st year of Nationals baseball.
I'm going to have to do it now.
But it is the 20th anniversary because it was April of 05.
Right, I remember that.
But you know how that math works. It's really hard. We used to have this debate with Blue Shorts based on the cup they passed out for their 10th anniversary.
Uh-huh.
Whatever it was, that's how long we've been around doing this now. Decade ago, we would have this big debate. Was this their 11th season and their 10th year?
But what anniversary is it?
I think it's their 21st season of baseball. And their 20th anniversary, which is not that crazy. Like, when I turned 36, it was my 37th year on the planet.
Yeah, so they've played 20 years from 05 through 24, so it's always one less than you'd think.
Seasons.
That's seasons. This will be their 21st season, 20th anniversary.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think we got that.
I think we got it.
That seems easy enough.
We got it.
Commanders have the Steelers on Sunday, and then 4 days later, they have the Eagles. They are trying to win Pennsylvania here, okay?
Good bet.
Pittsburgh and then Philadelphia. Steelers coming here with an elite championship caliber defense. Eagles hosting with, I think, a defense they'll be able to move the ball on and score on, but a scarier offense in terms of weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
Best two-game stretch in terms of opponents they felt dealt with all year.
Yeah, it's not hyperbolic either. That's a combined 12-4 record between the two teams. This is like old school NFC East type stuff, right? Back in the 80s and 90s when you had a couple juggernaut opponents and you happened to play the best team from the AFC the week before. This is rare that you're going to play two teams back-to-back that are this good.
So if they go 2-0 in this next two-game stretch, what are we going to be saying? Versus if they go 1-1 and if they lose both. I want to go through all three of those possibilities. Let's go in reverse.
Okay.
They lose twice in 5 days to the Steelers and the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
They are now 7-4. They're very well positioned to make the playoffs. They're still an odds-on favorite to be a wild card team with very favorable tie-breaking metrics. But at that point, you'd imagine they're no longer tops in the NFC East, and because for the moment at least they wouldn't have the tiebreaker, the Eagles would be the most likely team to win the division. Mm-hmm. What will we be saying?
This is another set of good games against good teams that they haven't come out on top. The four best teams they would have played, they would have lost all four of those.
So it's those two games, the Ravens and the Bucs?
Yeah, you'd say, right? Now, Tampa's not the same team now that they were then. Week one, Tampa was good. We saw it the first part of the season when they had everybody healthy, et cetera. Tampa this week, no Evans, no Godwin, you know, missing a bunch of guys. But that you kind of go, okay, they're still ahead of schedule. They're still good. In fact, they're probably at the top of the good bucket. But maybe not quite ready for all of the things that we're dreaming about. Maybe not quite ready for all of this parade or this NFC title game or whatever. Whether that's fair or not, that's kind of going to be, I think, the point of discussion where you go, you've beaten bad teams. I talk about this all the time. If you beat bad teams, you go to the playoffs. If you beat some of the good teams, you get home field advantage. And that's a season. And there you go, right? You go 500 against excellent teams. You're ahead of the game. You're a legit contender. So if you don't win either of these two games, you're going to go, okay, as you said, they're very well positioned. They're still going to the postseason. There's still a lot to be happy about. And that's a bummer, but maybe we have to slow our roll a little bit, but we're still, you know, doing really well.
So I think the national discourse around the Commanders is going to be, if they were to lose both of the upcoming games, they are a paper tiger. I think that's what people are mostly going to be saying. Now, everybody loves Dan Quinn. Everybody loves Jaden Daniels. We got some guys in the Cool Kids Club. So I don't think anyone's going to be selling on Washington in the grand scheme of things in the big picture. Everyone will still be putting the Commanders over nationally. But I think they're going to say what you're talking about, which is when they play good teams, they lose. They beat up on the bad teams. That's certainly not how I'm going to feel. Assuming they're competitive in those two games, I guess how they play them is going to determine a lot for me. I'm just going to feel like football happened. I think they've already proven themselves to be really good. There's a half season left, so they're going to have to, at different points, continue to prove that and keep showing up and keep showing that you're good. But I'm not going to view it as a referendum if they lose to Pittsburgh and Philly, that they actually weren't as good as we thought, or we put our, you know, the cart before the horse, so to speak. It's not really how I'm going to be thinking about it, unless they lay a couple of eggs and they just get exposed in areas where we didn't know they weren't that good, or some of the issues that haven't reared their head over several weeks now suddenly become problems. But that's not normally how it works. I mean, the sample size of a half season is generally good enough to know if something is a big, big issue. We will have seen it already. It's not like they played two or three games. They played 9 out of their 17, man. Like, they played more than half of the quarters they're going to play this season. So that's if they go 0-2. If they split, are we going to be in the same boat as we're in right now? Does it matter? I mean, obviously the Eagles game is way more important because it's in the conference, in the division. It's head-to-head with the team you're trying to beat for the NFC East. So if you could split, you want to win the Eagles game more so than the Steelers game. But I wonder if they are, say, 8-3, 1-1, that to me would feel like more of a positive than a negative.
It would here too for me, yeah. I mean, because again, it's the one of the two or three best teams you've played at this point. You can quibble over where you put Pittsburgh.
Like, you'd have your best win that you don't currently have right now, your signature win.
And there it is. So if you drop one at home and then have to turn around 3.5 days later and go play in Philadelphia when they're likely to be 7-2 coming into the weekend, and you win that game, I'll take that right now. Sight unseen. I'll take that. I'll take 1-1 if you perform that. I would sign up for that, as you know, if you offer me that blind, like door number two. You know what I mean? Like, you'd be 8-3 with a commanding lead in the division, because now you've beaten Philadelphia. Your divisional record is, I think, 3-0 at that point, and you're well ahead of things.
Ooh, that's a very fun question. Actually, I'm going to jot this down to come back to. So you're saying right now, either the whatever happens or 1-1, you would take 1-1.
Yeah, if I get to touch a button, you know, like one of those weird movies where you touch a button and something happens that you can't see, they go 1-1, they lose to Pittsburgh and beat Philadelphia 4 days later. I'm signing right now.
Okay, so in that order.
Yeah.
Like, you would not sign up sight unseen for 1-1.
No.
You would sign up 1-1 with a win over the Eagles.
Yes.
Ooh, that's fun. I think that's the right answer.
Versus take your chances. Maybe you go 2-0. Maybe go 0-2.
Because I do think they can go 2-0.
I think they can too.
They're favored over the Steelers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to be favored over the Eagles. I'd like to see a look-ahead line on that. See if you can find that, Darius. They're on the road. Philly gets 2 points, maybe 2.5 there, depending on what the Lynx home field advantage is. I'm confident enough in them that I wouldn't take the deal, deal or no deal style, over what's in the case. I would not do that, definitely if I didn't know which one they're getting. Because they would win the one that matters more, I think I would probably have to. The Eagles game is the biggest game of their year until they play the Eagles again. Those will be the two biggest remaining games on their schedule.
At the moment, our friends at FanDuel have the Eagles favored by 3 at home.
3 points, really? So I guess that's not that surprising, although they are saying on a neutral site, Philly would win that game too. Worse in the standings. Haven't been as impressive. But they're the Eagles, and Washington, I guess, is the team that's been bad for 30 years.
Probably part of it, I would say. Yeah, and what you do well, Washington maybe struggles with in terms of weaponry and the like. You know, A.J. Brown's health is
on the other side, though, too.
Totally fair. A.J. Brown's health, I think, is a major question there. Is Goddard's getting healthy? Although, you know, that's usually lasts for about an hour, hour and a half.
Maybe they feel like the Eagles have a better win or better wins on their resume. They beat the Bengals more handily. They got blown out by the Bucs as well. They lost to the Falcons. Their best win is Green Bay. That's a really good win. But if you remember, that was not in the United States of America.
That was a weird game.
And it was in week one. It was on the opening Friday night of the season. So I don't know how relevant that really is at this point. Do they have a good win other than the Green Bay win?
That's their best win.
But I'm dismissing. I mean, you could count it if you want to. They played the Packers.
Yeah.
But it was a weird surface, slipping and falling all over the place. They didn't even play that well in that game. Since then, if you don't give them that on a neutral site, do they have a good win?
Bengals is the next best thing. Bengals playing better now than they were then.
I got that one, too.
I know. The way they did it, it wasn't like if, you know, Cincinnati misses a chip shot field goal, which Evan McPherson never misses, then you have to go for two twice. Like, Philadelphia handled Cincinnati. But again, that's I hate doing the transitivity game where you're going, well, right. This team beat this team by this amount, which means they're better or worse.
Okay, if we're playing that game, they barely beat the Browns.
Totally.
Washington beat the brakes off of.
Exactly. So it cuts both ways there. I mean, they were dominating Jacksonville until they weren't, right? I mean, they probably could have, you know, very easily lost that game too. So, yeah, I mean, look, trying to make that value proposition of going 1-1 if that one is Philadelphia. The more puzzling question for me is, would I just sign up for 1-1 right now?
That's what I'm wondering.
Regardless.
I think we should take calls on that later, maybe next hour. To finish out the exercise, we talked about 0-2 and 1-1. They're 2-0.
Hello, operator. Can you book me up a suite in New Orleans, please, for me and the fellas?
I mean, guy, if they beat the Steelers on Sunday and then they go to Philly on Thursday.
In front of us.
We'll be there
with
our good friends, Kondori, Murad, and company at Lincoln Financial Field. But can you imagine if they win both of those games and they're 9-2 after beating two playoff teams?
Oh, I'm going to be insufferable.
Then they're the Lions and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Then they are, it's not the only team better than them is .. Then it's just best team in football. And if they do the same route as the Capitals and the Nats, where do we want to sit during the parade route? Like, those are the conversations.
Those are the convos. 9-2.
9-2. My lips are filled with smile. The Beltway Blitz in 20 minutes. We've got tickets to Iron Maiden. Right at 4 ahead of the Blitz. Next, our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Don't forget, Alex Smith is on the show today at 6. The former quarterback here in D.C. stops by to talk Jaden Daniels and the changing culture in the nation's capital. It is time, though, for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
GP, I played basketball last night, got home, and then watched my pal Grant Paulson on television, and I got there just in time. I feel so bad for those Nashville folks, by the way. Imagine coming from Nashville, you want to see the city, see the sights, maybe see your hockey team, which started to play a little bit better lately. Caps don't play that well. Maybe we'll get a win for true. Maybe the tides have turned here for the Preds. Barry Trotz is a great leader, man, I'll tell you. He's going to win one for us, our great history and everything. And then Ovi's got to score a game-winning goal, and you have to go home sad. That's a bummer. Anyway. You did a great job on TV last night, by
Thank
the way.
You. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Love you and DSP and Tark hanging out. played basketball last night and then played pickleball this morning. Everything hurts. I don't know. Something's going to have to give. I'm going to have to stop something. I'm going to have to. I need breaks. I need to not go and try and be better. See what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying really hard. You know what I mean? Like, we do shtick and you make fun and everybody should, right? I know what I look like. I'm goofy. I got my weighted vest on sometimes.
I wear
my
pickleball glove. I don't think anybody
makes fun. No, there's mockery and it's good. It's well-earned mockery.
You're working hard. You're exercising. I mean, you're just playing a lot of sports.
I'm just exhausted.
Like you're a child.
And it hurts. It's the hurting and the soreness and the tiredness. That's all. I don't really have a great double play other than to tell you that I'm miserable over here. Like, I can't sit right. I can't, like, lean back. I'm getting spasms every now and again. It's like, what life is this? What's happened? That's all.
Tired Danny?
Tired. Fatigued.
At tired Danny.
Sore Danny. At sore Danny.
Well, you're not giving up pickleball, because I know that.
Well, that's true.
So I guess basketball is the first
basketball
thing
might have to go.
Are you playing anything else or just those two sports?
Those are the two ones. And I've got, so one of the, we had a listener hanging out with us in the Manassas spot, Uptown Alley, who was a really, really good softball player. And he was like, dude, I never see you out there. I'm like, I know, I can't do it. I couldn't do it as much. Like in the fall with football, the games on Sundays. And he's like, don't you miss hitting nukes? I was like, I do. I do miss it. I like hitting it. And then it goes over the fence and everyone goes, ooh, ah. And that feeling of connecting to the ball. I might have to do softball again. It's calling. It's beckoning. So that's going to be a third thing.
But that, not if you get rid of basketball.
Then it would be a second thing. But basketball, I'm having fun. Sometimes I have fun. Not when I get cooked like last night.
What do you want
night.
Me to do then?
I don't know.
You're yelling at me.
I'm not yelling
at you. Play less things.
No. Wait a minute.
I know pickleball's not going anywhere.
I'm not yelling at you.
Well, you started by saying something's got to give. Am I just supposed to be listening?
I have these combos with my wife. I was like, do you want me to listen or do you want a solution?
But here's what you did. You complained that you're playing too many
I know.
Things.
You're right.
And so I'm saying, okay, well, then you could get rid of basketball because you like pickleball most. And you say, well, I'm going to be adding softball. Okay, well, basketball makes it two things. But now you're telling me you want to keep basketball.
I don't know.
You getting rid of pickleball, guy?
No.
I don't think
no, I'm not.
You built a court in your backyard.
It's in the. It's also a basketball court.
But it's not there for basketball. That's a nice side effect.
It features basketball. In addition to pickleball.
Why'd you build it?
Pickleball.
Why'd those guys come?
My wife is listening. For the kids. We built it for the kids.
Right.
The kids. The kids are named Danny Rouye.
It's an investment
yes,
for the
it
kids.
Is. For it's so they can play once a month.
It's time for my double play. All right, so we have gotten through. I've punched through a couple of the things that were left on my list. I believe I got to start my Vince McMahon Netflix documentary.
You're going to love
next.
It. You're going to love it.
That's where I'm at. I'm going to start that. I am also, though, going to be soliciting right now those of you who have a good documentary series for me and or true crime or whodunit situation. I'd like any and all of those. Tell me where it streams and what I should be watching at Grant H. Paulson. But basically the schedule for me right now is, like most people in America,
am I right?
All day Sunday is football. Monday night and Thursday night also go to football. I might be able to sneak in an epi. Not an EpiPen like Darius used to use and doesn't anymore. But an epi like an episode. One episode after Thursday night football, possibly if everybody's already asleep. But this is mostly a I need something on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's got to be Vince McMahon next because I've been telling you I will watch.
So it you lived a lot of this. And so some of it will be like, oh, I kind of remember
but
that.
I don't
and
need
that's
it to be new. It, like, I can't watch. This is going to sound really weird. There is not content out there on the DC Sniper that I have not watched. Because as a child, that was a huge part of, like, I was petrified.
Oh, yeah.
It was not that far from me. And, oh, I just ate at that place or I was across the street from there. And, like, there's not a podcast. There's nothing I haven't listened to.
That's the Home Depot we go to. For
exactly,
sure. Yes.
On that. So I don't need something to be new and enlightening and insightful and to give me intel I didn't have to enjoy it. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. So, but that's what I was going to say is some of it, because you already sort of knew it, but you hadn't thought about it on a daily basis, you go, oh, I remember that. So it gives you that. It gives you some really good insight. They edit it very well. And usually, like, when you hear edit and documentary, you go, oh my God, that sounds shady. But you're getting people to say something. So, for example, it'll have Eric Bischoff, I'm not spoiling anything, say one thing, and then Vince McMahon, that's what Bischoff said. that's ridiculous. You know, like, boom. Like, that's awesome. Right. Like, I'm so entertained by that, by the way.
That's a 10.
You know?
No, I know I will like it, for sure. I think I have two of those that I don't, like, whatever they put out on it, I'll watch. It would be, as mentioned, the DC Sniper. Mm-hmm. And September 11th is another one, where I've seen every movie, every documentary there is on every flight and all the stuff. Like, I consume all of that. Do you have anything like that? When I was a kid, it was the Titanic, weirdly. I think it just because of the movie came out and I was kind of fixated on it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, there's no one subject. I'm more of a generalist in that way. Like, I like having, like, the one nugget I can share with somebody about something. But if anyone wants any follow-up questions, it's like, look over there, and I run away. So, like, I like being a tourist in that regard. So, it's that we like some of the similar stuff. Give me that, you're not going to believe this bleep, right? That, whatever that is, where it's like, it sounds stranger than fiction. That sort of stuff I can't get enough of.
Double play on Grant and Danny each and every day, driven by your local Washington area Honda dealer. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. We've got those tickets right at the top of the hour. If you want to see Iron Maiden right here on Grant and Danny, you better be listening ahead of the Blitz next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.